Ken Wiebe, welcome, sir. It is so good to talk to
Thank you very much, Rob. I appreciate the warm introduction and also the autograph turn up the radio intro music. Also very much
Hey.
appreciated right there.
That, you know what? This is what classic sports talk radio is all about. Good guests, the right music coming in. This is the way it was meant to be, Kenny. This is the way it was meant to be.
I love it. Always great to share the airwaves, and yeah, it's an exciting time. It was great to spend the past couple of days at the rink talking about hockey. I mean, I know a lot of us are having some minor annoyance with the unfit to play labels and the shroud of
Yeah.
secrecy, but that is a first world problem, and it's great to be in arenas and to see some things starting to develop as we get set for what should be just a fabulous series between two very evenly matched teams, or at least they were evenly matched the last time that those teams were
Yeah.
stepping on their respective ice surfaces. Going to be interesting to see how things develop over the next couple of weeks. I know here in Winnipeg, Rob, I'm very much hands and feet special right now. I have not seen a lot of battle drills, haven't seen any special teams work. Just basically, it looks, Adam Lowry described it today, speaking of Calgary folks, reminded him of a development camp where you get drafted, you show up, you touch the puck, you start to get to know about the organization off the ice, and then things ramp up next time down the road. But expecting the intensity to start to rise here in the next couple of days.
So a couple things, Ken. One, I'll ask the kind of the present question, then I want to go back a little bit in time with you. What's so Adam Lowry says it feels like a development camp. What's the vibe around the team? We talked to Michael Backlund yesterday, and he said, you know, as soon as the whistles go and the pucks go, felt back to normal. There's this sense of, you know, today the right things are being said by the right people in terms of the team needs to atone for last year, those types of things. What's the vibe around the Winnipeg Jets here 2 days into this phase three camp?
Yeah, Rob, I think there's definitely some similar feelings. I mean, both these teams, that's the fascinating part of the series, is that both of those teams went into last spring with enormous expectations. The Jets having gone to the conference final the year before and having a very similar roster, at least on paper. Yes, Kevin Hayes was in for Paul Stastny, but the core group was 1 year older and ready to learn from going to the conference final, only to be ousted in six games in the first round. Yes, it was by the eventual champion, but in the last year of entry-level contracts for Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine, it was viewed as the widest portion of the window to be open for the Winnipeg Jets, and yet they were on the sidelines after the first round. So there's an enormous amount of disappointment that the Jets are looking to atone for after an early exit as well, similar to how things are in Calgary. It's interesting. I mean, with the Zoom element, you get the feeling, to answer your question better, when you're around the players talking to them in the room and in casual conversation. But in terms of what we're hearing from Mark Scheifele, from Blake Wheeler, from Adam Lowry, yes, you can definitely sense there is a high energy level. These guys are enjoying being out of the house, being around their teammates and their buddies, even if there is a social distancing component. And it's funny. One of the strangest parts about the hockey so far is that the celebration element, even though you hear the hooting and hollering through the glass window, there's not as much of the, there's not a lot of hugging, there's not a lot of high-fiving. Like, people are, everything is, there's a feeling out process in terms of what you're allowed to do on the ice. And I think once we get to August 1st, there will be a little bit of a, it'll be back to anarchy and playoff mayhem, but for now there's sort of like a little, still a little bit of tiptoeing around when it comes to how you actually are allowed to act on the ice in terms of, like I said, those celebrations and things like those natural raw emotional elements of the game that will be such a big part of playoff hockey that you just don't get that same feeling during a training camp, whether it's now during a pandemic or in a normal year in September.
So I do want to take you back just a little bit. It's crazy to think that these two teams, technically within the confines of this season, played outdoors in Regina, but here we are. The great Peter King used to have a column, The 10 Things I Think I Know, and I always credit him because I love that line. Here's what I think I know about Winnipeg. Vezina caliber goaltender and Hellebuck, four really good offensive guys, including somebody that most of us will not name as nearly a 40-goal scorer in Kyle Connor. We know about Patrick Laine. We know about Scheifele. We know about Wheeler, but really good offensive team. But no Byfuglien, no Trouba, no Myers. You know, there's the defense doesn't appear to be what it was. What's the snapshot? You know, March 12th comes, this team's frozen, it's part of the pause. What's the snapshot of the Jets at that very moment?
Yeah, you know what, Rob? Healthiest that they had been all year, with the exception of Brian Little, who will not return to play this year after getting a second concussion and a perforated eardrum, being on the receiving end of a slapshot from linemate Nikolai Ehlers back in early November. But otherwise, Jets seem to be healthy, the healthiest they've been. And the bigger addition on those fronts at the deadline, Jets bringing in Cody Eakin to alleviate the loss of Little, and also the big move on the back end with, leading around the time you sort of knew that the termination of the contract of Dustin Byfuglien would be happening. So bringing in Dylan DeMello was a real stabilizing force for the Jets back end. Of course, it does not look the same as it did on paper in 2018 or 2019. That's obvious. The Jets' right side has completely been overhauled. They lost Ben Chiarot, so four out of the six guys are gone. Neil Pionk has done a fabulous job filling in for Jacob Trouba. Dylan DeMello came in and provided steady minutes. He's sort of another one of those under-the-radar guys. He doesn't get a lot of points, but he's the type of player who makes his partner better at all times. Because of his hockey sense, he's always in the right position, and he's a good outlet passer and a guy with good mobility. And the biggest part about the Jets' back end is what Dylan DeMello helped do for Josh Morrissey, who had a bit of an uneven year by his own standards. Here's a guy who's been the steadiest performer on a high-end blue line for a long time, playing whether it was alongside Jacob Trouba or prior to that with Dustin Byfuglien. There was enormous pressure on him this year. He became an alternate captain for the first time. It took a lot of things on his shoulders, and once DeMello came in, we saw the best version of Josh Morrissey. And by his own admission, and on his Zoom call in the offseason, he said he learned a lot by dealing with a lot of that adversity. And by the time the pause came, the Jets' defense corps was actually pretty stable. I mean, no, they don't have the big names that they had before. And, you know, Dmitry Kulikov is now playing on the second pairing and sometimes in a shutdown role. And I expect he'll see a lot of Sean Monahan's line in the playoffs, but I think that Morrissey and Dylan DeMello also really just became a stabilizing force for the back end and allowed Tucker Poolman, who spent a lot of the year on playing first-pairing minutes with limited experience at the NHL level, moved him onto a third pairing with Nathan Beaulieu. Lucas Pisa is in the mix for that third pairing too as well, sure, but I mean, their top four is a lot more stable than it was before, and as you mentioned, I mean, the biggest thing about the Jets that the people outside the market don't necessarily realize is how high-end those players are. And outside of that four, I would even say that the fifth guy in that group that also gets overlooked often is Nikolai Ehlers, who, yes, he only has 7 assists in 20 playoff games, but he was on pace for his first 30-goal season and is a guy with enormous not potential, that's not the right word. He's an established player, but he's a guy with a lot to prove going into this playoff, and I'm here to tell you that I see him as the X factor in the series, and the narrative about Nikolai Ehlers can't score in the playoffs, I think it's going to be vanishing into thin air very shortly into the series.
Kenny, I once watched a Detroit team with Datsyuk and Zetterberg and people questioning whether or not they'd ever be able to perform in the playoffs. So, and the same thing with the Sedins, like that's old school thinking. These guys evolve into it. They have no doubt they have to see it for the first time. They have to witness it. But a lot of these times, these skill guys, once they figure it out, they'll be just fine. I think Ehlers kind of fits into that category.
He sure does, 100%. I mean, yes, last year in the first round, he had no points. But he's also a guy who played in Game 5 with a fractured foot. He blocked a slap shot from Colton Parayko in Game 5. In Game 6, he probably shouldn't have been playing, but he chose to, you know, he got a bunch of shots and injections, and no, he was not at full speed, but showed the courage of playing. And I mean, that's the archaic part about the, you know, a portion of the media dynamic is that if Nikolai Ehlers doesn't play, his heart and his heart is being questioned, and he's called soft. When he does play, even though he's not at 100%, people are saying, "Oh, you hurt the team. You should have pulled yourself out." I think that's absolutely ridiculous commentary. So for me, Nikolai Ehlers, I had a great talk with him coming into training camp. No one was more disappointed than him that it didn't go well in the playoffs. What he did was, instead of sulk about it, he watched every single shift that he took last year and made himself a better hockey player, went to the harder areas, continued to use his speed to play a little bit more of a north-south game. Yes, there's always going to be an east-west component because of his skill set, but he engaged a lot. I mean, this is a guy who dropped the gloves this year with Ryan Getzlaff and Jamie Benn, something he should has no business doing. So I think that Nikolaj Ehlers is a guy who is really ready to perform. And, I mean, you touched on line. I mean, his numbers were down compared to normal, yes, but his all-around game is night and day better than it was before. To me, yes, he's always hard on himself at times when things aren't going well, but he avoided those large mood swings in terms of the feast or famine nature of 18 in a month and then not scoring or having one goal in 13 games. That just didn't happen this year. He was a right. much more productive player. He's always been a great passer, but that element was on display more as he played with Mark Scheifele, with Wheeler playing in that second-line center role with Brian Little being out until Eakin arrived. Laine is another guy who I really think that Flames fans might not enjoy watching him in the series coming up because I think that he's ready to inflict a lot of damage. I mean, again, like I said, it's only 2 days of camp, but for me, he's moving around very well. And this is a guy who has had a spotlight on him since around the time he was 16 years old. He loves a big stage, and he's had a couple of really big games against Calgary in the past. And I think that he and Ehlers together, I think Calgary's going to have a hard time trying to contain them, I think. And I also think that Mark Scheifele is just he's a game breaker. There's no other way to describe it. Yes, there were times this year where maybe his defensive game, or he had that evolving two-way game that maybe wasn't quite at the level that we had seen the year prior, but Mark Scheifele is flying around, and I really think that he's poised for a big series as well. It's going to be great to see. There'll be an element of head-to-head with Monahan, but you're also going to see Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp have a lot of time against that line as well. They're an unconventional checking line, Rob, in that they're an old-school line that spends a lot of time cycling in the offensive zone. Yes, they are responsible defensively, but they also make that offensive line work hard defensively, which a lot of those lines, as you know, aren't yep. super comfortable doing, with the exception, I would say, on that line of Elias Lindholm.
He's Ken Wiebe, contributor for Sportsnet in Winnipeg, our guest down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. A couple more for you, Ken. So take Calgary out of the equation. You know, you look at, you know, there's lots to be excited about with Winnipeg. We mentioned the offense, and we haven't even talked about Hellebuck, but again, Vezina caliber season. What gave this team trouble in the regular season? Because they didn't run away and hide. They were kind of in the middle of the pack. Technically, they're the visitor in this five-game series, if you will, but that comes down to percentage points. But what's the Achilles heel of this makeup for this team?
Yeah, for sure, Rob. I mean, they had trouble defending. There's no way to hide that. It doesn't matter if you're looking at regular stats, analytics, advanced stats. All of the metrics showed that the Jets gave up far too many high-danger chances this year. Now, a lot of that is smoothed over by the Vezina-caliber goaltending of Connor Hellebuck. And what I would also say is that once the Jets got closer, This didn't just happen in March or February. Mm-hmm. For me, this goes back to coming out of the All-Star break and the player break, the stacked 10-day break. The Jets were much more responsible in their own zone. So they cleaned up some of those things early, and by the time they got really rolling and on a four-game winning streak going into the pause, which was their longest of the year, they had found the template for how they need to play in order to be successful. They were back to being a little bit more diligent in their own end and then started to use their offensive creativity. So the Achilles heel during the year definitely was a poor defensive play, and that's not just a knock on the defense by any stretch. Their five-man unit game was not good enough. And the other thing that we saw early on, even in the game in October in Regina at the Heritage Classic against Calgary, the Jets' penalty kill was absolutely atrocious out of the gate. They were almost allowing a 50% efficiency rate in the first month and change, but yeah. It probably was closer to 60. But, I mean, it was in the 50s for a substantial portion of time. But since January 1st or whatever the number is here, I don't have it in front of me, the Jets had a top five penalty kill. And their power play, which had been top 5 to 10 during the previous 2 years, was also operating at more in the bottom third of the NHL, but by the end of it, it was in the middle, like between 10 and 15. So it was in the upper half. So when those two elements are going as well, then the Jets become a lot more dangerous. But the special teams were a big issue early. Their defensive play as a whole was poor. And because they were trying to do a little bit more defending, even though they weren't successful, they weren't as prolific offensively, given the makeup of their roster. So for me, they've cleaned up a lot of what would have been the Achilles heel. But again, that's 4 months ago. And can they tap back into where they were at in March? Or will it be closer to what we saw in October, which they needed a lot of time? And I'll talk specifically about a game in San Jose where the Jets had no business of winning the game, but Hellebuck made 49 or 50 saves and they won 2-1. And that sort of got them going back to being a bubble team where it had the potential to kind of go south in a hurry, given all the injuries and the Bufflin uncertainty and all those things.
Last one for you, Kenny, and it's a little bit kind of off the topic, but I think in some cases it might be more to the topic. The pandemic, we've seen Black Lives Matter and social justice, and that brings us to Blake Wheeler, who has found himself with a voice and a very strong opinion and a platform here in the last couple of months. Just your thoughts on the Jets captain just kind of, capturing the moment, standing up and being heard from.
Yeah, there's definitely a stand up and be counted element there, Rob. And oddly enough, it's come in a season where Blake had a tough start. Here's a guy who had two 91-point seasons and had 8 points in the first 16 games. And, there were some whispers from certain corners of the world saying, oh, well, now he's just starting the first of a 5-year deal, $8.5 million is here the start of the precipitous decline. And what Blake Wheeler said to that was, hang on a second, I'm going to be a point-a-game player for the last 56 games of the year. So never mind the fact that he filled in at a position that's not his natural position and played at a point-a-game level, you're 100% right. I mean, in terms of Blake's a very private person. I've covered him for 9 years. He likes to keep his personal life and private very much in private. But the way that he has been outspoken in the George Floyd murder, in how he's trying to explain to his three young children what's happening in his hometown, has been exceptional to watch in terms of his leadership and guidance as a parent. I mean, I don't have children, but I was incredibly impressed by his ability to take you into his living room, essentially, and his just, raw ability to speak about how challenging it's been to be, cooped up during a pandemic with three young kids. I mean, we often don't think about that part of life for athletes. Yes, they make a lot of money. Yes, they're fortunate to be playing a sport they love, but they have real life issues to deal with too. And I think it's just been impressive the way that he's handled himself. He's a great leader. And I mean, again, he mentioned it yesterday in his call, and I led my story with it. I said, Sam Wheeler said, hey, she's definitely not saying I'm thrilled with you being gone for potentially for 2 months, but she said, don't just go and lose out in three games, make it worthwhile. Yeah. And give us something to be entertained by. And that's a good attitude to take. And yeah, like you said, Blake Wheeler has just done a very good job of pulling back the curtain and letting you into his life. And he's really leading by example in a lot of ways, both on and off the ice.
Hockey coverage is always better with Kenny Wiebe in it. And the fact that you can come on the station and we can have this chat just made me smile. My friend, thanks for doing this. Enjoy the rest of this, whatever this, I guess it's the new reality, but it's going to be fun and it's going to be here in a couple weeks. So it'll be exciting. Kenny, as always, thanks for doing this, pal.
My pleasure. Have a great day, Rob. A pleasure to be with you.